that?
Hello and welcome back to the Afoot podcast, a podcast about mysteries of all kinds, genres, natures, bodies in the snow, hung corpses in the attics, and everything in between. I'm Glenn Fleischman, your host, and joining me this week to talk about a very special Halloween topic is David Lohr. David, hello.
Zoinks!
And that might be a hint. And Shannon Sutterth, greetings.
Jinkies!
Well, nobody listening would have any idea what we're talking about, except it's Scooby-Doo, where are you?
Ruh-roh.
We thought – we were trying to find a good Halloween topic. We launched the show in Halloween last year, and we thought we'd find a topic that suited. And Scooby-Doo – because, you know, Halloween's about horror more than it is about mystery. But Scooby-Doo is the intersection of humor, horror, and mystery. So we thought we would talk about this show. And I did some background research. I haven't watched the show in years, but I have this recollection that I've seen thousands of episodes. I have no idea how many there yes. are, right? And
thousands.
So I start to do some research and read about it, and I realize I thought there were like three different eras of it, and there are like 17. I told my wife, I was like, did you know how many versions of Scooby-Doo? I'm like, there are 17. She says, you're exaggerating. I'm like, no, I think there are. There's like the original run and then reboot and then movies. Then it's on ABC. Then it's on, you know, it's on CBS. Then it's on ABC. Then it's revived. And then there's,
all the pair-ups.
Yeah, the pair-ups. And then there's Scrappy-Doo, which I hated. And, you know, all that. We'll talk all about that. But so Scooby-Doo is like this it's this massive thing. Like the Wikipedia entry is hilarious because there's just so much of it. I'm sort of staggered by how successful it must have been to spawn this many different things over what launched in 1969. So we're now at almost – we're going on 50 years of Scooby-Doo.
We should start at the very beginning.
What's right? the very beginning? Fred Silverman, of course.
Fred Silverman.
He's at the beginning of everything.
Now, you know – when I was growing up and started paying attention, because, I mean, as a child, even not knowing who Brandon Tartikoff was, because he wasn't Brandon Tartikoff really at that point, I wanted to be Brandon Tartikoff. So I paid attention to network stuff. And Fred Silverman was already a joke by the time I started paying attention. Because, yeah, he was there for the rise of Jiggle TV on ABC. He was already at NBC. He was, you know, developing Super Train and Pink Lady and Jeff. And, you know, that's where I was really paying attention to television. And I was surprised. I knew he had been at CBS before either of those. And so I was surprised when I found out several years ago that he is the one who kind of went to Hanna-Barbera and said, you know, I really like this Dobie Gillis show we used to have. And, you know, if you could do like a cartoon inspired by that. And you know, Frank Sinatra has this thing he likes to say. It's like Scooby-Dooby-Doo or something like that. And, you know, I think that would be a great name for something, but I don't know what it would be. And Hanna-Barbera went back to their company, and it was actually Joe Ruby and Ken Spears, who were writers working for them at the time. They're the ones who sort of put it together and developed it and gave them names and said, it's the dog. The dog is named Scooby-Doo. There you go. And, you know, that kind of thing never occurs to you. It's like, how did they come up with this idea? Because it seems like a natural, right? You've got your intelligent mystery solvers. You've got your comic relief. You've got your somewhat talking dog. it is kind of follows a basic template of mystery solving. But for me, the key to Scooby-Doo and the reason it's endured for so long is that it's not that it's funny, though it is, not always, but it, you know, at its best, it's really good. They're solid mysteries. They play fair with the audience. But for me, the key thing is they're saying it's okay. There's no such thing as ghosts, right?
Oh yeah.
It's always old man Jenkins, right? So there's nothing really scary in your closet. It's old man Jenkins trying to get the family fortune that's buried under your room or whatever, right? And that, to me, that's the enduring thing for Scooby-Doo. It's that it makes it feel okay to be scared by things and realize they're not that scary.
Oh, you just connected this to Sherlock Holmes, right? When you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, is the truth. Or there lies
exactly.
the truth.
Exactly.
And I never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
Because they are always eliminating the supernatural. They're always saying, well, of course there's no such thing as ghosts.
Yeah. And it plays sort of right into what the studio execs were trying to do at the time. Apparently, parent groups had gotten all up in arms over the excess violence of the cartoons in the late 60s. It's like, gee, that doesn't sound at all familiar. But yeah, that to come up with this idea of, you know, a bunch of kids who stumble across these situations and wind up solving these mysteries. And as you said, they always turn out to be, you know, just, you know, somebody, you know, some guy, almost always a guy.
Mr. Willoughby.
Dressed up in a suit, faking it. It's tailor-made for all of these parent complaints that it's, oh, we don't want them to be too scared and we don't want it to be too violent. And of course, it was never bloody or anything like that. You had people trapped all the time. But, you know, never actually injured. Out of that, it has spawned this empire that has continued to this day.
It is pretty staggering, the scope of it. But, I want to double back to that, too, is I was born in 68, and I don't think I saw – I think by the time I was a kid and watching cartoons, even a few years after that – I mean, I was probably watching them at age one, given the era, or in the womb or something. I don't remember the violence of the 60s because I don't think those were being rerun. A lot of the shows that
they
I've seen – yeah, as examples, I never saw those. I didn't know they existed. I thought they were like 60s kitsch that were too terrible to show. Rather than just being like a lot of other Hanna-Barbera and other shows at the time, you know, sort of very cheaply made, pushed out, I didn't know that Scooby-Doo was considered – I mean, it's obviously not a – it's not violent, right? There's very little physical violence. It's just mostly being scared and fear and, you know, there's a lot of bravery, right? Like Fred is always – you know, we should – I mean, we have to assume listeners know the show because if you're listening to this and you don't know Scooby-Doo, wow, is there a back catalog for you to go through? You know, it's got the formula, right? There's five kids. They're all loosely modeled after the characters on the many loves of Dobie Gillis.
There's four
kids and a dog. Well, is he a dog? Sure. Where's the dog?
He's a guy in a suit.
And the Betty Loves Dobie Gillis, one of my father's favorite shows. I watched it occasionally and always loved the character Maynard G. Krebs, which is a great – it's like the best name
work
developed for anything. And who is the beatnik character played by Bob Denver, who went on to be our friend Gilligan. There's brave, beautiful, brainy, and beatnik, right? And that's the four – that's the template.
And considering the – you know, everyone knows Gilligan's Island – Dobie Gillis ran much longer. He was Maynard G. Krebs for a lot longer, a lot more episodes.
Isn't that funny? But Dobie Gillis wasn't as popular in reruns, and it wasn't in color either.
It was black and white, and that is the large thing. And I only rediscovered it on Nick at Night in the late 80s, early 90s.
Dad had been talking about it my whole life, and I was like, oh, I can finally watch it.
And I mean, I had seen the reunion movie that they did in the late 80s. And I was like, okay, you know, because I'd always been curious because I was really deep into TV history by that point. And but it wasn't until I saw the sitcom, the actual show itself, that I went, this is pretty good. And it's based on a book. And the book is pretty good.
It was a really well-written show. It was well-written.
Yeah, very sharp.
Beautifully edited. I mean, it was just really – and the characterization, it was funny. It was a very funny show. And I think it was one of those things that was ahead of its time. But – and it was a CBS show. So CBS is like, well, I guess. I mean – you think there'd be more intellectual property concern? Maybe the Tiffany Network owned these rights, probably. Who knows?
Well, they produced the show, so
yeah. So this is essentially it's very similar characters, much more broadly painted, you know, without the nuance, and plus a dog.
And you had Hanna-Barbera, which, you know, the Flintstones are the Honeymooners. The Jetsons are kind of the Honeymooners. Top Cat is Sergeant Bilko. So it's sort of like, yeah, all right.
It was a thing.
That's what they do.
Yeah, in my case, I never saw Dobie Gillis or anything like that. I just remember starting to watch. I was probably 5-6 years old, and the original Scooby-Doo run had begun, and this was interesting, and it was fun. And even though I didn't twig it at the time, it was predictable. It did have a very firm formula to it that I think flies right over little kids' heads that it is a formula. They just like that they know that, you know, the next step is going to happen. You hit a place in your teenage years or so where it's kind of like, you know, the formula is almost too tight or too much before you come back to it nostalgia-wise.
I mean, that's part of the comfort of it. Even if you are scared in the moment when you see the mummy coming at you going, Klein, Klein, you know that they're going to solve it. You know it's going to be okay.
I have to wonder what it was like to watch that first episode without any expectation in an era of live television where you're watching it with commercials. Like, I still, you know, it's funny. Even I record some stuff on a DVR still and skip the commercials, but I have so little recollection at times of what it's like to watch normal television even. And today, a lot of TV has a lot more commercials if you watch it on this network. So I'm thinking about you're watching it, all the anticipation, those breaks between it, and you've never seen this before. What did kids think when they watched the first episode? Because then they're like, oh, thank goodness. It's not as scary as I thought. There's an explanation. And then next week, you'll be like, oh, this is a pattern. And it's like, then that's the show for – we'll get into it, for like 20 years almost. That's the pattern of the show through all these different iterations. What do you think it was like to watch? I mean, I try to just imagine myself as that kid.
I remember because of all the shows, I mean, I used to watch pretty much wall-to-wall cartoons on Saturday mornings.
When I was little.
You know, that was great. You'd come down at 7 in the morning and you were there till 1 in the afternoon.
My wife was just reminiscing about this and thinking, actually, it's such a shame for our children that they can't
do it. Yeah. I mean,
it's like, why not? You know, like, we're not into this, like, do homework all weekend kids. Not that they have it. But it's like, we can't even come up, we can't even, like, arrange a pseudo thing. Anyway, but it was a wonderful time.
It's like, my history lessons. Where were my history lessons?
I remember watching, like, the, you know, Tom and Jerry and the Grape Ape Show and Laugh Olympics and the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner show, and all the songs from that are stuck in my head, you know, 40 years later and all those things. But the only two things I ever, whatever else happened, I was going to watch Scooby-Doo and I was going to watch Looney Tunes. And there was just something about I've always liked mystery. That's, you know, big shock. Mm-hmm. So of course that was the one that stuck. And I watched some of the other Hanna-Barbera things that once they went, hey, that worked. Let's try it with three kids in a talking car. Hey, let's try it with a rock band and a talking shark underwater. You know, it's like, I watched those and they were okay. They didn't even at the time, they didn't really hold up to rerun watching. Speed Buggy was kind of okay. I like Speed Buggy. And Jabberjaw, it's the theme song. After the theme song, I can walk away.
Have you ever seen the episode of Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law?
Yes.
Of course, I never saw the original Birdman, the one in which it's all Shaggy lookalikes, right? It's all from all of these different series. Like, yoinks, he looks just like me. Everyone with their catchphrase, and there's like Tinker. All the different associated creatures, and people look sort of like Betty and Veronica, and it's very funny.
Yeah. And you know, it's so I had a real appreciation for Scooby-Doo. I mean, I watched Clue Club. I watched The Funky Phantom. I watched all of these, you know, let's take the template and switch it. Hey, let's have them solving mysteries with an actual ghost, you know, and they were all ridiculous. Whereas Doinks. Scooby, I could keep watching that. And even now, I mean, I'll watch things that maybe I haven't seen in 20 or 30 years. And I'm remembering the dialogue because I've seen them that many times.
There's a lot of great archetypes in the show too. We were comparing notes on the Incomparable Slack, and it's like all the guys were all, you know, Thelma guys. We're all Thelma. Of course we are. We're all geeks.
I go either way.
Wait, are this you is, Daphne?
This is okay. Okay.
Marianne or Ginger? Marianne or
of
Ginger?
Of all the things you've got what? Marianne and Ginger. You got Jeannie and Samantha. You've got Jennifer and Bailey on WKRP, and you've got Daphne and Velma. Those are the big four, right? And in,
wait,
in
Jeannie, almost, and Jeannie and Samantha from whom? From Bewitched?
I dream of Jeannie and Bewitched.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think it was from one show, and I was like, what?
No. But like, but those are always the comparisons, right? And, you know, I'm solidly Marianne, pretty solidly Samantha, pretty solidly Bailey. I could go either way on Velma and Daphne.
Fascinating. Well,
yeah. It's the only one where I can go either way.
Is Daphne a femme fatale? I mean, she can be, but she's also very capable.
She could be, but that's what I like.
She got capable later.
Yes.
You're right.
She was danger-prone Daphne at the beginning.
That was one of the things that irritated me, because I was the little girl with glasses and brown hair. Daphne was the pretty one, and it was the one I thought I wanted to be. And it's like, no, she was the one who kept getting kidnapped or kept falling down a well. It's like, no, I don't want to be. I want to be Velma. I want to be the smart one.
I mean, pretty much the only thing you could do to Velma was knock her glasses off. And then, you know, she had about a minute where she was searching for them. But otherwise, she was fine.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember. I'm remembering this through, you know, six-year-old eyes. And then I probably watched it through my teen years and sometimes beyond. And I rewatched I watched something I'd never seen before, which we'll talk about later, the Zombie Island special. But my recollection is there was not a lot of negging going on in the show. People weren't like, you're smart, you're stupid, you're pretty, you're handsome. They were portrayed in a certain way. And people joked about – no, people didn't even joke that much about Shaggy being afraid. They were just always – there's a joke. They were surprised he was afraid, right? You were talking about David, I think. Like, it's always surprised.
That was Monty. That was Monty.
Oh, Monty. I'm sorry. Monty Ashley cannot be here. But he said, please talk about the fact that everyone – every episode is surprised that Shaggy is afraid. But he's always afraid. So why are they surprised every episode? What are they expecting from him?
Because they're thinking the best of him.
Yeah, I guess so. But on the other hand, you know, have something happen to Daphne and you sure shootin' had somebody go, oh, danger prone Daphne did it again. You know, so it didn't hold up for every single character for a while. And as you all pointed out, after a while, through various iterations, Daphne got more capable eventually.
Oh, yeah. The thing I did notice as a kid was that in the very beginning, they changed this very quickly. And I think someone must have noticed. When they would split up, because they always split up for part of the show, right? You usually had Fred and Daphne would go off, and Velma would go off with Shaggy and Scooby. And so she would give them a little bit of courage, but you always kind of wondered what Fred and Daphne were really up to.
Yep.
And very quickly it got to where they'd split up, where it was Fred, Velma, and Daphne, and Shaggy and Scooby could go be the comic relief.
That asks other questions too, though. I'm sorry.
Oh, yes.
There's other questions there.
I think Fred is like me that way. I don't know. He could go either way.
Exactly.
But I don't wear an ascot.
I think this cycles back to Encyclopedia Brown a bit too, as I talk about it, is that there's the mysteries aren't the thing you talked about was fair dealing, which is interesting. So, so David, my recollection of all the plots, I was trying to actually think if I can remember of favorite episodes, and instead it's a continuous blur. And I was looking at a lot of videos. Mm-hmm. I watched, I think, Tony Sindelar, who's one of our Incomparabilians. He gets involved with the MIT, hunt, the scavenger hunt thing to do. And he's created puzzles and he's pointed me to a page in which they'd edited together clues from different episodes. And it's always like the same pattern, you know, castle thing, mask being torn off. And I'm like, at some level, they're indistinguishable and there's a comfort in that. But here's my question is you said fair dealing earlier. So do you think like Encyclopedia Brown or Encyclopedia Brown was often unfair, right? Like Agatha Christie.
Right.
Agatha Christie is very unfair. She's like, yeah, so that's because the Count always, you know, was allergic to cyanide or something. You're like, no, come on, Dame Agatha.
Well, I think Encyclopedia Brown was fair, but you had to know certain things sometimes. Like you had to know that this created that reaction. It varied.
Right. So you had to know the boiling point of water and what a frog would do in the water at the boiling point.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. Okay, no, that's a good point. But you were saying, so you obviously have a clearer memory of this, David. So you think that Scooby-Doo, so one of the things was it treated kids fairly in terms of like presenting the facts so they could draw a conclusion that gave them clues?
Yeah, yeah. There was always a very clear, here are the extra characters. There weren't going to be too many of them. You could always tell who was the absolute innocent. Once in a while, there, you know, there'd be something where it looked like someone had done something, but it was clear that it was a frame. And there were always clues that, you know, even if it didn't quite make sense while you're watching it, when they go back and say, well, old man Jenkins from the bank was trying to foreclose on the farm, and here is a corner torn off of his business card that has the word bank on it that was left at the scene. Or, you know, just little things like that where it all connected. And there wasn't anything where it was like, oh, here is a person you never met before who turns out to be the guy in the mask, right? Mm-hmm. Or here is a clue that you have not seen before that Fred hid while we were trying to capture the ghost. It is at its best. Again, I should say, not all Scooby-Doo series are created equal. But at its best, it plays scrupulously fair with the audience.
I think that's a very excellent point. And it's actually an inflection we can talk about too, is you'd hinted at it early on, that the show. So Shannon, I know you share a love of Jorge Luis Borges and, we've talked about this.
Zoinks!
And I was, zoinks! And I was thinking there's this split. So the early series, like for 20 years, Borges. David and I were trying to figure out the point, but most of the first 20 years of Scooby-Doo, ghosts are not real. Supernatural's not real. Then, there's kind of
even longer than that. When is,
was it? Well, 1987 is the Zombie Island episode.
The Zombie Island is 98.
Oh, 98.
So that's almost 30 years.
Oh, I'm sorry. Almost 30 years.
But even there, it's really only the first 12 or 13 years where they're doing mysteries. Right. Mm-hmm. And Scooby would show up once in a while, like they did the Laugh Olympics, where it was just like right. all the Hanna-Barbera characters.
They're like guest right. shots. And, right.
Right. Yeah. And then Scooby and Scrappy. Well, OK, so here's the sequence. They did a Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? That's mm-hmm. the original. I think they did 2 years of it.
Yeah, which is crazy because I think of that of having lasted for like those original ones seem to me like a big deal. But they made 17 episodes, I think it is.
Right.
And they ran over and over.
Oh, my God.
And then they made the new Scooby-Doo movies, which were two-parters. So you had, and they broke them into half hours. Right. Mm-hmm. So you had another whole cycle of those. Then they did the Scooby-Doo show a few years later. That's where you have like the electrical monster and, the opening credits with the file cabinet. And, and a different theme song. The song is not right. Only the classic has the right song. And then after that, you have Scooby and Scrappy-Doo, which is still trying to do mysteries. And Scrappy is brave. And that's the joke, right? It's like, oh, yeah, he's brave and hanging out with Scooby and Shaggy. It's like, how cool is it that we get to capture ghosts?
He's just tiny. He's tiny. He's
he's a little puppy.
Foot-high detective or something.
But then after that series, they started to, maybe it was the attention span splintering. I don't know. But now they started doing short subjects. Mm-hmm. So it'd be like an 8 to 10 minute cartoon that was just, Shaggy, Scooby, and Scrappy traveling around and actually running into ghosts. Not trying to capture them. It's just, hey, wacky hijinks. Oh, yeah. And they did that for a while, and it didn't work. And then they did, the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo. And that didn't work. where the idea is that it's Daphne in a different outfit and a little orphan kid and Shaggy and Scooby.
Jesus Christ.
And they accidentally released... They like did some sort of curse that was broken, and these 13 ghosts get out, and Vincent Price, basically, not playing himself, but he's basically Vincent Price, tells them that they have to capture the 13 ghosts. And again, it's totally supernatural and it's okay, but it's not a mystery, and it's not, it's just dumb.
That gets you more into horror than mystery, right? Because this is the genre. Yeah. It flips from, there's like... it's always got broad comedy elements, but things that are just purely like farcical, whatever, and Abbott and Costello-ish kind of stuff. And then there's it started with mysteries. It did that. Then you have kind of horror versions of it. But then this is kind of the next stage we get into, right?
Right. And then the last gasp of real mystery for a long time was a pup named Scooby-Doo.
Right.
But it was too silly. It was not – they were not good stories. They were not – and it's the people who went on to do like Tiny Toons and Animaniacs. And so I know that, they can do good stuff, but this was not that. And so after that whole thing, they come back around to saying, hey, part of why this worked is that we're telling good stories, mm-hmm. right? And whatever else I have a problem with Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, and I do, it is a good story. Just in the abstract, it is, solid characterizations, it's fine. But it's totally supernatural. The ghosts are real. And that was, that was the whole pitch. It's like, it's the X-Files is popular. What if the ghosts were real?
God, I forgot it was 98 that it was that late that they did that.
Yeah. But that totally undercuts the whole security of Scooby-Doo and the popularity of it is that the ghosts aren't real.
So this is my Borges references. I was thinking about how Borges, particularly in some of the stories, is composing mysteries that can be solved by the human mind that are like Tlan Akbar and Orbis Tertius. That's people creating an encyclopedia that describes a world that doesn't exist. And ultimately that world starts to come into being. But part of it is that it is, and he even says it in the story, that it can be encompassed by, it's not as mystifying as the mind of God, which is unknowable and completely incomprehensible. You instead replaced it with a man-made mythology, which is also, that's what X-Files is. It's what every mystery show is. Every universe that's created is a universe created from the mind of man that is explicable within, humanity's grasp, right? So you could say that the early Scooby-Doos are all non-supernatural. They're all things that are keep us from like the fear of existentialism. But once you have the supernatural, then you're with the mind of God. Then the whole top of the universe comes off and there is no security or certainty in the world. I don't know, Shannon, maybe I'm pushing things with that metaphor.
No, I'm highly amused that, but I think it's accurate.
Yeah, I can go with that.
All right.
Yeah.
They've
kind of slipped back to doing straight up mysteries again, which is good. And, you know, some of them are good. Some of them are better than others.
I watched all of Scooby-Doo and Zombie Island because I flipped it on because I was like, well, I should watch something that's more recent because I never saw it. And I wound up watching the whole thing. It's like an hour and 20 minutes long. And I'd want to hear your feedback, David, because you have negative things to say about it. But I actually thought it was pretty good. It had a mystery I couldn't figure out. And there were these great elements like, like Velma's in the kitchen of this restaurant resort on an island covered in cats that she's brought this cook has brought them out to. But it's all plausible. The whole plot, but she starts, there's like a message, evil message has been engraved on the wall. Get out. And she starts scraping at it, and then she like takes a spatula or something and scrapes all the paint off the wall to reveal the name of a ship that the hotel was rebuilt out of. And the woman who owns the place comes and says, "What are you doing in my kitchen?" I'm like, it just had that like I'm making mashed potatoes into the shape of a devil's tower because I'm compelled to feel like.
Yeah, I mean, my only problem with it is that it goes full supernatural. Which, you know, I mean, there's not really a mystery to solve. I mean, there is, but it's not the same. And, you know, certainly for my kids, it didn't hold their attention because it wasn't right. That wasn't Scooby.
Well, the one mystery was you're trying to figure out why the gardener was so creepy, and it turns out because he's a law enforcement. That's the only mystery, I think, right? Well, no.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of funny. There are elements, I think, that are actually in Pirates of the Caribbean kind of thing. It's like you're not sure. There's all these angry ghosts and they're ghosts and there's also zombies. So you get both, which is cool. There's even the subplot. I mean, the overarching thing is that the gang is broken up, but not for bad reasons. It's just very casual. Velma, horror of horrors, like in It's a Wonderful Life. She's not a librarian. She's a mystery bookstore owner. Oh, no. Heavens. And Scooby and Shaggy have our grifting TSA agents. They eat too much, Shaggy and Scooby. I'm very disturbed watching that one too, specifically.
They have
I'm really fast
metabolisms.
I'm very disturbed, but I don't know why that was funny, like as a recurring gag. But yeah, so the plot is, you know, so Daphne has a successful television talk show and Fred is her producer and like Shaggy and Scooby have these crappy jobs where they can just steal food, commit small crimes, and Velma has a bookstore and the gang gets back together. They go off to shoot a thing because they want – Fred is tired of these fake ghosts. He is tired of these ghosts with rubber masks, which is a great meta plot.
It is a nice gag, yeah.
And he's totally skeptical the whole thing. The best part is when Shannon, you got to watch a little bit of this, and folks, you can find this in different places because there's a great part where there's like a zombie that's collapsed, like it's a animated body. It's got a rubbery looking face, and Fred's like, "Look, it's a rubber mask." Like, no, look, you just got to pull harder. And I forget who pulls hard enough. They pull the head off the thing, and he's like,
"Oh God,
okay, it's not a mask." And then the thing, they throw the head around, everyone touches it, and then the thing reanimates and like takes its head and puts it back on. I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty good. Like, that's a good, like, we've just crossed over. There's no explanation.
Yeah. And, you know, it really harkens back to like the Abbott and Costello meet blank monster movies that Universal used to do. Because Universal had them under contract. Universal had all the Dracula and Frankenstein and the Mummy and the Wolfman. And they all met Abbott and Costello after a while. And it was a way to rejuvenate both franchises. And it's the same kind of thing. It's wacky hijinks and figuring out what's going on and very simple gags and scares. And I mean, I watched all of those as a child too.
I'm trying to remember because my viewing is not as – I've not watched much of the modern versions at all.
You're lucky.
I watched the original. I have vivid memories of my mother coming in of a Saturday morning once they got into the era where they were bringing in the celebrity guests.
And my mother, who
was like this massive fan of Sonny and Cher, and she sees their cartoon versions on the screen with Scooby-Doo, and she's just like, "What is this? What is going on?" She like felt horrified horrified, like they sold out or something by agreeing to voice their animated selves on Scooby Doo. You know, when? All of those different ones, Sandy, Duncan, the Addams Family, and
yeah.
And I remember questioning at the time, wait a minute, you know, the Addams Family's like television, like they're on TV. I could tell that there were fictional guest stars and real life guest stars. And I remember being confused by that at the time. And then about the time that Scrappy-Doo showed up is about the time I checked out.
I think a lot of people
And it was funny because they introduced Scrappy to boost sagging ratings, and apparently it worked for a while. So they must have like picked up a new generation of younger kids who had not seen the originals that spurred it on for a while.
Yeah, I mean, that's about when the originals started stripping on the, you know, Monday through Friday on a lot of stations, too.
So it seems like there was this there's this generational divide of, you know, when you started watching the show determines whether you think that Scrappy-Doo is okay or cute or spawn of the devil.
One, you know, one of the things about the new Scooby-Doo movies that always cracked me up as a kid, and it just seemed so weird that, you know, you'd have like high profile guests like Sonny and Cher. I mean, at the time, very high profile.
Yes.
And then you'd have Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin show up more than once.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you'd have Sandy Duncan and sort of like this weird combination. Phyllis Diller. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like Don Knotts.
I think there was one where he's Don Knotts and there's one where he's Barney Fife, if I'm not mistaken.
God. I keep coming back to this. Don Knotts was one of the most popular actors in his day. And not to talk him down at all, I just still find it improbable how incredibly popular he was during a period of time in his career.
Mm-hmm.
Cass Elliot.
Like the George Clooney of his era.
Right.
The Harlem Globetrotters. Josie and the Pussycats. The Three Stooges weren't even alive.
Josie and the Pussycats was one of their spinoffs.
That's right. Well, that was based on an Archie Comics series.
Right.
That's like one of the few like pure adaptations they did. But it fit the template, and they sort of reshaped it a little bit to their template. And then Josie and the Pussycats in Outer Space is totally, it's like sci-fi Scooby-Doo, basically.
Yeah.
With a little Lost in Space thrown in. Because Fred Silverman.
Yes.
Fred Silverman. I learned about him first, by the way, from the parody on Saturday Night Live of
the Star Trek.
John Belushi. Oh, there was that too. You're right.
Yeah.
But John Belushi playing Fred Silverman trying to set up the network lineup with little Velcroed cards sticking him on
a
wall.
That's right.
A little bit of inside baseball for late night TV, I think. We should talk about some of the voices too, because this show has spanned 50 years or so. It seems like, Casey Kasem, I didn't realize until looking at this, because there's so many series. We've only talked about like 50% or 40% of the series. We're not going to list them all because you can go to Wikipedia for that, which is extensive. Yeah. But there are a bunch of later series that I never saw. They're from the last several years. There's like two, three different four series.
And some are better than others. What's New Scooby-Doo? Not bad. It's really trying to get the old style, the old type of story back. And Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated is a serialized thing where they're all in one location.
Oh.
And it's kind of interesting. It kind of meanders a little bit, but it has an episode with special guest star Harlan Ellison.
Oh, my God.
That's insane.
Is it just him screaming obscenity and bleeped out the whole time? I would love to see that.
It's just him bitching about City on the Edge of Forever for like half an hour.
Oh, my God.
No, it's not. But he is himself in the show, which is great.
But because it spans so long, it seems like Casey Kasem is the most, broadly well-known person. And he voiced Shaggy until 1985. And then I didn't realize he'd stopped doing it. I mean, he's passed away now a few years ago in a very ugly family squabble over him.
Way to bring down the room, Glenn.
Sorry. Casey Kasem. But he hit a long-running career. But he was
stars.
A vegetarian, and he objected after being forced to do Shaggy for a Burger King commercial, and that was it in like 1985. So Zombie Island had, I think it's the only appearance of our friend from Futurama, Billy West, doing the voice. But Frank Welker was involved in the series for a long period of time. Frank Welker also in Futurama, but also Frank Welker being the voice of a million things, you know, many animals.
And then Casey came back in 2002 and did it for quite a while again.
Oh, is that what it was? Because I thought he had done new shows.
He did come back.
Okay.
He did come back.
They said we'll never make you advertise hamburgers again, we promise.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Frank Welker was Fred Jones in the original series. I was thinking about Scooby-Doo. He came back later.
That's Don Messick.
Yes, and he came back later and did Fred Jones. He did both Fred and Scooby-Doo, and much later in the 2002 series and after that.
How scary is it that I'm not even looking at the computer right now?
I know this.
Yeah.
This is why you're part of this show and every show on the Impactful, David. It's, I don't know. It's a show that has a lot of lifespan, but it's funny because I don't think anyone would say, I wanted to talk about the show because I have such fond memories of it. Like, I remember enjoying it. Just like, I mean, we did a kids, mystery book, episode that you will hear in the near future. We're a little behind on editing. And so we wanted to get this one in for Halloween, but we've got episodes coming up. This actually has given me a good time to insert our plug before we're through with this episode, which is, you know, you can help support Afoot and all incomparable shows because we are offering a membership with a recurring subscription. You can pay yearly or monthly. If you go to theincomparable.com/members, you can sign up. You get to support the shows. You can mark us as one of the shows you want to support. We get a little bit of the money from what you're paying. You can figure out which shows you want to support. And this helps us have the resources to hire editors and to put the time in to produce more shows because we've only done about, I think this will be our 8th episode in a year. We'd like to do more. We've got 2 in the can. We've got another one planned that's going to be taping soon. So we'd like to get to monthly or more frequently again, and you can help with that. But you also get some cool extras. You'll get episodes that are members-only episodes from various shows. You'll get access to bonus feeds that have outtakes, previews of new shows. There's live stream versions you can get only if you're a member, and there'll be more to come too. So if you like what you hear and you'd like us to do a little more of this, I'd love to, and you can help us out directly.
Do you know, if I were Scooby-Doo, do you know what I would encourage members, encourage listeners to do?
Ruh-roh.
Relp!
I can't do any of the voices. I can't do any of the voices from the from this show. I do a lot of voices, but I can't do.
Why don't we go down to the malt shop and get some burgers, Scooby?
Hey, Scooby! I can't do any of them.
Ruh-roh.
And I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for you meddling kids.
Coin.
I don't know the coin. Coin? What is he saying?
It's the mummy. The mummy is after the precious gold coin from the sarcophagus.
I thought he was after Tim Kaine.
He just keeps walking along going, coin.
This show spans 50 years, and I don't think it has the same – you know, I have a lot of fond feelings for it. We obviously all have fond feelings for it, but it doesn't have this totality that other things that have been around for a long time in different incarnations and reboots have. Like, I don't feel that there's – it's in such bits and pieces. There was no, like, creative mind, like, behind Star Trek and Gene Roddenberry. There's nobody – Fred Silverman may have helped create this thing, but the driving force has not been
– Well, now, see, this is my – The first two iterations of it, the Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? And the Scooby-Doo Show, or I guess for a while it was called the All-New Scooby-Doo Show. Those were masterminded by Joe Ruby and Ken Spears. And then they broke off in the late 70s, early 80s and formed their own animation company. So they went off and did things like Thundar the Barbarian and all kinds of other stuff. And so that is literally – literally, when you see when they left Hanna-Barbera, that's when Scooby-Doo started to do all these weird things like the short subjects and the supernatural stuff and the Laugh Olympics and, you know. And it was like they kind of protected Scooby. And that's why – I mean those two versions of it are really the only ones I ever go back to anymore. Some of the new movies are good and I'll check them out. They did a Lego Scooby-Doo movie this past year, which is a lot of fun.
Oh, that's hilarious. I did not know about that.
Yeah, it's direct to DVD, like most of them. But it's a lot of fun. It's got a lot of nice in-jokes for people who know Scoob. But literally once Ruby and Spears left, I think the first thing that happened after that was the Scooby Goes Hollywood special they did on ABC, which I remember when it aired. It was prime time. It was like Saturday night at 8 p.m., and it was an hour-long thing about Scooby trying, you know, getting an agent and trying to get into all kinds of other things. And it had nothing to do with what Scooby-Doo was, right? There was no mystery, no ghosts, no nothing. It was just, hey, let's make fun of Hollywood. It had no magic. It had no – it was funny. It was fine.
But the show persists. The characters persist.
Yeah, because those core archetypes really work, and those two original series and the new Scooby-Doo movies, which are – they're pretty good. They're not quite up to those first – those other two versions of it in the 70s, but they're still solid mysteries.
And then, of course, there were four live-action versions made that we haven't even talked about. I've never seen more than a still frame or two from the live-action films.
They're only two, but they're not there.
No, I think there's two that are direct to video.
Oh wait, there's one for Cartoon Network at least. Yeah, is that right? That's right.
It lists there's four, but they were for TV. Yeah, TV movies. So two are TV movies and two are theatrical. We would be terribly remiss if we didn't bring up Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which uses the archetypes and even some of the
the template.
I mean, no, it's exactly. And then, of course, they call themselves the Scooby, gang.
The Scooby gang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they are. But it really cracks me up. Xander is not quite Fred. He's Shaggy and Fred at once, maybe. But
and I remember there's one episode where he goes, "So what? I'm the dog?"
One of my favorite things from Doctor Who, of course, is the moment when Mickey in one of the early.
Oh, that's right.
Says he realizes something like, "I'm the tin dog." And that's a great moment. It marks a changing point for his character in that show.
Yeah.
And I've wondered Xander's evolution in Buffy kind of comes when he realizes that he's maybe not that specific moment, but.
Yeah. And the Doctor Who, there's another reference of Russell T. Davies, or I forget who was writing that particular episode, when they cross into another dimension. But apparently Scooby-Doo's in that dimension too, because the Doctor and, Rose and Mickey, they're all these fairly young people in the van, and they, pull in the business mogul, and he's just looking around going like, oh, great. I've been communicating with Scooby-Doo. You've even got the van.
Oh my God. I forgot about that. That's wonderful.
Yep.
It is right. It is like Bad Wolf, the mystery machine, and all of its cultural reference and templates have propagated backwards and forward through time. So our entire idea about a slightly goofy model for teens fighting crime is always this template.
Yes,
and there's a great Venture Brothers has a really creepy version of this where the dog is talking terribly to Shaggy. No one else can hear the dog, and he's talking these dark things to him, and the whole thing sort of falling apart. But like Venture Brothers can be pretty dark. But and someone posted, David, was that you, the Velma with a and Scooby looking pretty, Fred and Daphne and Shaggy are gone at some kind of post-apocalyptic zombie era Velma.
Oh, that's right. I think I saw that on T-Fury originally.
Yeah,
so it's a T-shirt. And now DC Comics has started the Scooby Apocalypse comic book with a, kind of not dissimilar from that style. And it is. It's a post-apocalyptic, they're a little more realistic looking. The Scooby looks a little more like he does in the live action movies. And I think it's kind of their reaction to Archie Comics Afterlife with Archie, which is very good, by the way.
Which series is that? It's dark, right?
It's a zombie story their flagship is Life with Archie. So yeah. Roberto Aguirre Sacasa came up with Afterlife with Archie and has gorgeous artwork by Francisco Francavilla. If you have any love or hatred of the Archie characters, please give that a chance, because if you love them, it's a really cool story. And if you hate them, Jughead gets killed pretty quickly and becomes a zombie. And it's a lot of fun.
This reminds me, though, I realize this is the thing I've been trying to put my finger on, and you just mentioned it, is almost every other animated show I can think of with any vitality and length came out of comic strips or comic books in some form, and this did not. And I'm sure there are many series of Scooby-Doo comics and books and things like that, but this has its own independent life versus like Archie or Batman. I mean, the superhero ones and Richie Rich, they appeared alongside Richie Rich and other things. There's Hong Kong Phooey and other early 70s TV shows that were all of not of the same mold, but they're crime fighting or whatever, mystery shows, and none of them persisted. We don't have like a Jabberjaw 50 years later, right?
Jabber. The only, for me, I mean, the song amuses me. The only reason Jabberjaw exists for me is for the really neat Cartoon Network promo they did in the mid-90s that did like an amped up speed metal version of the song, and it's very cleverly animated. And it's like, following them through a mousetrap style board game. So it's, you know, kind of 3D animation and kind of stop motion and kind of computer animated. And it's really clever. And I'll find that for the show notes. But yeah, that's the only reason Jabberjaw exists for me.
That's right.
No, well, who remembers the names of the characters on that? I remember Mark, Didi, and Tinker from Speed Buggy. And of course, Speed Buggy. I can't go on, Tinker. I did really like Speed Buggy, but that added in a whole science fiction element too.
So, David, the question is, are you Shaggy or are you Fred or Velma?
Yes.
That's it.
I am all of them at various times.
Shannon, I don't want to cast you in this production, but I assume you're an amalgam of all the characters.
Like I said, fairly early on, I identified with Velma very strongly. So yeah, a little bit of Velma, a little bit of Fred. Yeah.
I'm a Velma aspirational, but probably more a Shaggy, gotta say. Must admit.
As long as you're not Old Man Jenkins.
Well, thank you for joining me on this exploration of the, you know, we could have saved this. We could have waited till 2019, but, you know, we had to hit it early. Maybe for the 50th anniversary, we'll talk about it again.
Dear.
But thanks for joining me on this exploration of Scooby-Doo. Thank you, David Lohr.
Anytime. Jinkies.
Same time, same channel. Shannon, thank you for joining us.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Now it's time for some Scooby snacks.
Whoa, what?
I always wondered what was in those Scooby snacks.
Reggie, come to your friend, Reggie.
Uncut Turkish hashish, of course. And folks, you can find us at theincomparable.com. And as I said, if you'd like to become a member, theincomparable.com/members, where you can contribute to this and many other fine shows for bonuses and extras and to help keep us producing this at the schedule we would like to. We've got episodes coming up. David hosted an episode on Columbo that you'll hear in the near future. Then we also have the kids mystery book one, and we're going to be talking in the near future about the Miss Fisher's mysteries as well. So that's all coming in this 2016 year, and then more next year. So thanks for joining us. And, you know, watch your back. There's always somebody with a rubber mask standing behind you, waiting to tower over you and grasp you, and miss you,
and
always miss you with those fangs and teeth.
And we would have gotten away with it, too, if it hadn't been for those meddling kids.